You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. There's been an ongoing controversy over whether or not it's okay to have a drink or two during pregnancy, especially in the first few weeks before a woman may know that she's pregnant at all.
But last week, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released new guidelines on fetal alcohol syndrome. These guidelines recommend that sexually active women who aren't on birth control should not drink any alcohol at all. The organization says any alcohol at any stage of pregnancy could cause a range of disabilities for the child.
Dr. Cynthia Anderson is with us now to talk about these guidelines and explain what fetal alcohol syndrome is. She's an OBGYN at UW Health. Dr. Anderson, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So what's changing with these new CDC drinking guidelines for women?
Well, the prior philosophy of the CDC really was more that women who are pregnant or who are actively trying to become pregnant should really avoid drinking alcohol because of the potential exposure to the fetus. And I think that what's new from the CDC guidelines is really that women who are sexually active with a male partner and who are not using reliable contraception should also just completely refrain from alcohol because the risk of an unintended pregnancy that could then expose the fetus to alcohol. So it's kind of a new layer to pre-existing guidelines.
And to talk about our terminology here, what is fetal alcohol syndrome and how does it affect babies?
Well, fetal alcohol syndrome is really the most severe form of a spectrum of disorders that's more broadly known as fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. So fetal alcohol syndrome, like I said, is the most severe form, and it has very specific diagnostic criteria that have been applied by the CDC, including growth delay, so low birth weight, less than the 10th percentile, very characteristic facial features and deformities, and also cognitive and motor problems that result from disorder in the central nervous system. But there's sort of a wider spectrum of disorders, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, that involve a range of mild to moderate symptoms that may not fully meet criteria for fetal alcohol syndrome.
And how many people are affected by fetal alcohol syndrome disorders?
Well, we don't know the full numbers because there's a lot of undiagnosed children out there, but the best CDC estimates are that up to 1 in 20 children may have some form of fetal alcohol spectrum disorder.
And what kind of treatment is there available?
Well, unfortunately, the results of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders last a lifetime. There's not really a cure per se, but we do know that early support and early diagnosis can improve a child's development. So usually there's the development of a comprehensive treatment plan with specialists in this field, and it may involve medications, behavioral therapy, support in educational environments, and also really close monitoring and follow-up over time.
So you're an OBGYN. How significant do you think that these new recommendations are for women?
Well, I think that it's promoting a conversation, which is much needed. 50% of births in the United States each year are unintended or unplanned. And so I think it's promoting a conversation with your healthcare provider about how to plan your pregnancy and how to plan the healthiest possible pregnancy.
So it's a conversation. These are recommendations. But if you're a woman of childbearing age, how seriously are you taking these?
Well, I think women, have a right to get all of the information that they need to make their own healthcare choices. I would take the recommendations pretty seriously. But, of course, the CDC can't ultimately control anybody's behavior. So it's going to be up to individual women to make decisions about what's best for them and their families.
We're talking right now with Dr. Cynthia Anderson from UW Health in Wisconsin, talking about new fetal alcohol syndrome guidelines that the CDC released last week. And there has been a little bit of backlash about these guidelines. Several sites with different opinions on this, the Washington Post, Jezebel, I believe, Slate. Here's a quote from one of them. Young women should avoid alcohol unless using birth control. The quote is that they're seeing babies as, or women as incubators for babies, and the government is just seeing all women as sort of in a state of pre-pregnancy. What do you think about that kind of backlash?
Well, I think that we should be careful when making these kinds of guidelines, because anything that we do that might make women, feel ashamed or marginalized or, feel that their decision-making is you know, being preempted by some other government agency can sometimes lead to unnecessary consequences, like women may be less likely to come in for care if they're feeling ashamed. They may be less likely to share important health information with their physician about their own health or maybe even about the health of their children. So I think these kind of guidelines need to be made in a way that makes sure women understand that they're being included in their healthcare decisions and they're not being marginalized.
So in the wider discussion here, some people have been pushing back that total abstinence just is maybe not realistic for women, and that women who maybe of childbearing age may not be intending to get pregnant shouldn't have to abstain totally, as the CDC recommends. What do you say to that?
I would say the more important discussion has to do with accessing reliable contraception. I think, you know, if you're planning to become pregnant, or certainly you're already pregnant, the safest thing to do is to avoid alcohol completely, because we do know that it has a pretty significant effect on fetal growth and development lifelong. But if you're sexually active with a male partner, you're not sterilized, your partner isn't sterilized, and you don't want to become pregnant, then the first discussion is, how do I get access to reliable contraception so that I don't have a pregnancy that wasn't intended? And I think the discussion about fetal alcohol syndrome and the risks of that are another layer of that conversation.
So where does that conversation about birth control take us? How reliable and how available is birth control right now?
I think it's getting better. We definitely still have women who can't access the services that they need, and that's unfortunate. We also have men who can't access the services that they need. But the Affordable Care Act has made some definite moves in the right direction to guarantee contraceptive coverage for all women who want it. And we also have some newer methods of contraception that are quite a bit more effective, like IUDs and subdermal implants that don't rely on having to remember taking a pill every day. They're 20 times less likely to result in an unwanted pregnancy compared to the older methods. So I think that we're making strides in terms of making contraception better and more effective and more available, but we're certainly not there yet. And unfortunately, we still live in a society where the majority of responsibility for family planning falls on women. And I think, you know, we need to be making better strides in the healthcare sector to find methods that are available to men as well.
Do you think that the federal government has done enough to ensure access to birth control? Should emphasis be placed there right now instead of maybe looking at this end of it?
I think that they've made some strides in the right direction. I mean, there are some statewide initiatives in Colorado, for instance, that showed great impact on reducing teen pregnancy rates, reducing unintended pregnancy rates, and even reducing abortion rates when they made comprehensive contraception available to all women, especially with the newer, more long-acting methods. And models from that state, like the state of Colorado, I think could be disseminated to other states, and that I think holds great promise.
Is there any move to do that, to take that Colorado model and transplant it?
They are trying to do that, but it's costly, and there's a lot of logistical barriers in terms of funding and such.
I want to look back at maybe a little bit of the science behind alcohol use during pregnancy. Now, anyone who's been pregnant knows that, you know, there's lots of theories floating around there. You often hear things like, well, in Europe, Italian doctors say you can have a couple glasses of wine. I know someone who said their doctor said it was fine. So what is the science on how damaging alcohol is during pregnancy?
Well, even Hal Lawrence, who's CEO of the American College of OBGYN, who was just quoted in an article about this, said, you know, for many years, the standard guidance from your physician was, if you had a drink or two maybe in the first trimester before you knew you were pregnant, it was probably fine and nothing to worry about. And I think in many ways that's still the standard party line, but I think we're starting to understand more that, especially during critical periods of fetal development, like between the third and the ninth week of gestation, when all the major organs are forming, the heart, the kidneys, the ears, and major nervous system development of the brain and spinal cord are occurring not only through the first trimester but throughout the rest of pregnancy as well, alcohol really has an impact on all of the development of those major organs. And so you know, the best and safest thing to do, according to all the professional associations now, really is to avoid all alcohol consumption during pregnancy, that there's really no known amount of alcohol that we can say is definitely safe.
We're talking right now with Dr. Cynthia Anderson about the new fetal alcohol syndrome guidelines that the CDC released last week.
We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What do you think about these new guidelines that say if you are a sexually active woman, you should, unless you're using birth control, abstain completely from alcohol? Is it realistic to expect these women who aren't on birth control to stop drinking completely? And what was your experience maybe during your own pregnancy? Did you try to abstain? Did you abstain completely from alcohol? If you're a healthcare provider, what do you tell your patients? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're picking up our discussion now with Dr. Cynthia Anderson from UW Health, talking about fetal alcohol syndrome and new CDC guidelines for women.
Taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Our guest says the growing state of the art says women shouldn't drink, especially at critical stages during pregnancy. These new CDC guidelines say not even when you're pregnant, before you're pregnant. If you are of childbearing age, you're sexually active, you're not using birth control, no booze for you is their recommendation. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these guidelines from the CDC? I don't think they go too far or a good idea. What do you think should be done to help avoid fetal alcohol syndrome, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders? Have you had to deal with one of those problems in your own life, in your own health practice, and in your own experience? Something people don't always want to talk about, but what was your attitude toward drinking during pregnancy? If you're in the current generation or generations past, the Mad Men era, what did you do then? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'll take a caller now. We've got Andrea on the line from Menominee. Andrea, hi.
Hi. I'm calling because this is personally affects me. I'm 10 weeks into an unplanned pregnancy, and I drank for the first 2 weeks prior to finding out that I was pregnant. And I feel like pregnant women already have so many things we have to be afraid about. And then this is just another thing to have to worry about.
Right. Andrew, thank you so much for your comment. And that's something that has been echoed online, that it's a scary time, it seems like, in some ways, to be pregnant. It seems like there's a lot to worry about. And now these new CDC guidelines, as you said, Dr. Anderson, adding another layer to that conversation. What do you think about sort of the fear factor in all of this, and especially drinking during those first couple of weeks, like Andrea was mentioning?
Yeah, I completely understand what Andrea is referring to. We have a lot of patients who express those same kind of fears. And I think that's one of the reasons why the CDC and other professional organizations have to be really careful about the kind of messaging, because, you know, pregnancy can be a time when, you know, women are making a lot of changes in their own lives, a lot of health changes and behavior changes to accommodate a new pregnancy. And, you know, fear and such doesn't really help. So I think, you know, we need to give women practical strategies for how to deal with this. And I think an important thing for Andrea and other women going through that same circumstance would be to just talk to your doctor, make sure that they understand if there's any additional testing that's warranted, that you can, you know, get the care that you need. And I think in the future, the conversation, like I mentioned earlier, would be better around contraception for those women who need it and want it.
Andrea, thank you so much for your comment, and you can join us at 800-642-1234. What do you think about these new guidelines? If a woman is sexually active with a male partner, not on birth control, she should be abstaining completely. Is that something that you will do now that these guidelines are in hand? Do you think that the contraceptives available are adequate? And what would you like to see changed to support women in this? Call 800-642-1234. And we have a comment here from Kelly on Facebook who says that the guidelines are supported by science, but the CDC's failure to communicate that effectively threatens its efforts to educate women of childbearing age. What would you say to that, Dr. Anderson?
Yeah, I mean, the science is there. We know that fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are real and that they impact a lot of children. But again, we need to make sure that the messaging that comes out to women promotes a collaborative environment with their healthcare providers, and that it promotes open discussion, and that it doesn't in any way make women feel afraid or ashamed or marginalized in terms of making their own healthcare decisions. So I think that was the unfortunate thing that happened after the CDC guideline came out, is that a lot of women sort of took offense to the way that the messaging was delivered. And I think that's what a lot of the backlash was that we read about over the weekend and even into today. So I think that's a cautionary tale that we need to take away as healthcare providers, that even with good science, we need to make sure that we're communicating in a way that promotes effective healthcare relationships.
Now, looking strictly here at Wisconsin, Wisconsin has a reputation for being a high alcohol use state and alcohol abuse as well. Does Wisconsin have a higher instance of these fetal alcohol syndrome disorders?
You know, that is a great question, and I would have to talk to some of my colleagues. There are specialists in, developmental pediatrics who deal with the children that are affected. And as an OBGYN, I don't really care for the children. So I would need to talk with them about that. I certainly know that in the state of Wisconsin, we have very high rates of drinking in general. We have very high rates of binge drinking, and also high rates of binge drinking among young women of reproductive age, so between the ages of 14 and 45. So I would anticipate that we probably are more affected than some of the other states that have much lower rates of drinking in general and lower rates of binge drinking.
We're going to go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Jane on the line in Kaukauna. Jane, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to share?
I'm just wondering about in the 1950s and 40s, and again, like the caller just said, it's from Wisconsin, drinking was kind of the norm. It was all part of going out with their friends. What happened to all of those fetal alcohol syndrome who are now adults? Did they see a lot of this? And I guess I'm just curious.
Great. Jane, thank you so much for that question. She's saying, looking back at the 60s, drinking was a big part of culture. So do we have any sort of data about what happened with those babies who may have been on that spectrum disorder that you're talking about?
Yeah, I don't think that we have great data on kind of people that are currently adults. Fetal alcohol syndrome in its most severe form has been pretty well understood, and there are specific diagnostic criteria that have been widely accepted and used. But that doesn't account for the majority of cases now, and the milder to more moderate forms of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders are only now really coming to be recognized. So I don't know the numbers on that.
So looking back, there's not clear markers of a kind of public health crisis, a generation that was marked by this.
Well, we know that rates of drinking are rising and rates of binge drinking are rising as well. So I think that that is one of the reasons why the CDC is starting to look into this more.
We're talking right now with Dr. Cynthia Anderson from UW Health. She's an OBGYN, and we're talking about new guidelines on fetal alcohol syndrome that the CDC released last week. And you mentioned that you thought one direction the CDC could begin to look was in more research on contraceptives for men. What sorts of things are you thinking about there?
Well, you know, the only real contraceptive method that we have for men these days would be either vasectomy, which is a permanent form of sterilization, or condoms. Vasectomy is not widely used in the United States. Condoms are more widely used, and they're the best method that we have, certainly for prevention of sexually transmitted infections, but they're not the best method that we have for family planning and birth control. We have a lot of other methods that are much better in terms of birth control, but all those other methods are for women. So there's definitely some research going on to try to look at forms of male contraception to really include men in the discussion and also in the family planning efforts. But I think we're not there yet.
And Dr. Anderson, we're just about out of time, about 30 seconds here. What is your message for your patients? What do you tell them about how they should behave around alcohol?
Well, moderation really is key. We know that drinking in moderation, six or seven drinks in a week is really the most that's recommended in terms of health and safety. And binge drinking really should be avoided. And so I would say that it's important to, you know, keep in touch with your healthcare provider, not only about the amount of alcohol that you're consuming, but about whether or not you're sexually active with a male partner, and if you are, whether or not you would like to become pregnant or not. And if you are, you know, planning to become pregnant and you're actively trying to become pregnant, then the best and safest thing to do is really to stop drinking alcohol at all.
There. Dr. Anderson, I'm sorry, but thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
That was Dr. Cynthia Anderson, OBGYN at UW Health, joining us to talk about new guidelines on fetal alcohol spectrum disorders that were just released by the CDC last week.